manufacturer of the Nikon Jane at this time. DJ Tanna Manoj is from Scotland. I am reading the So, from lust to love. We're all familiar with lust. Lust is what? It's like a desire. It's like an overwhelming, sometimes overwhelming desire, strong desire. Right? And sometimes you can talk about lust for food or lust for money. Usually, when you talk about lust, it's lust for sex. That's the usual object. And it's described that in the Bhagavad Gita, are you familiar with the Bhagavad Gita? Are you?
No.
Okay. This is a copy of Bhagavad Gita. It's the basic book of yoga. This is called Bhagavad Gita as it is. It's got English and explanation for all the verses. So now you're on your way to being qualified teachers, and you're all at least a little familiar with Bhagavad Gita. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about lust in one place. And he says, Dushpure Nanalena. In Sanskrit, that means, Dushpure means it's never satisfied. You know, we want, like say, let's take lust for money because it's a cool topic. Lust for money, and I get $100 and $100. And I want $200. And I get, there was a sign in Bombay, now that you've made your first million, what will you do now? And the answer was, work on your second million. We never said, that's enough, I'm satisfied, and you know, that's it. We want more. We want more. More money, more sex, more whatever it is. We want more. Dushpure means never satisfied. And analenacha means it burns. It burns like fire. When there's lust in the heart, it's like practically the person feels like he or she is on fire. Dushpure analenacha. So how does this lust develop? Of course, being on fire is not like lots of fun. That's understood. How does it develop? Krishna says it's like this. First, we start, something catches our eye and we start thinking about it. Right? Whatever it is, whether it's a new iPad that I want, or it's a girl down the block, or whatever it is. First, the mind starts going. And then I start meditating. I start thinking again and again. Jaya visions. And then the next thing is association. Then I want to get close to that iPod. I want to get close to that girl. And then it becomes very strong desire. Now that I've got my hands on the machine or I've got close to the girl, and it's like strong. So what happens is that the mind and senses are uncontrolled. In another class, we were talking about that this morning, that we're not trained to control our minds. Rather, we live in a culture where we're encouraged to just like let our minds go and you know, dream. Go ahead and dream. And so everybody goes ahead and dreams about the girl in the store, or about their daughter, about their sister, about, you know, these things go on. About somebody, their best friend's wife. And, you know, there's a part of them that says, well, no. But then they go on thinking and thinking and thinking. And the mind is, they're not trained. You know, where's the off button on the mind? Where's the channel control? They don't know. That wasn't part of their training. They were trained in anthropology, or they were trained in mechanics, or they were trained in this, that. They weren't trained. How do you control the mind? And so the mind becomes their worst enemy. And the Bhagavad Gita said the mind can be the best friend, and the mind can be the worst enemy. Mind means what we think of. To be the best friend means the mind can lift us up. Or the mind can be the worst enemy. The mind can drag me down. When is it my friend? The mind is my friend when it's under my control. We say, I'm going to put my mind to this. Right? That's a common expression. Let's put our minds to this. I'm going to put my mind to this. That means mind listens, mind, you're going to listen to me. It's homework. Got it? Or it's whatever it is that I want to put my mind to. Whether, you know, I've got to pass this exam, I've got to get this job, got to name it. The mind says, all right, you're in charge, I'll do it. But what happens when the mind says, who are you? Get lost. Why do I have to take orders from you? Then the same mind becomes our worst enemy. You can imagine if you're in a car and the car doesn't, you can't control it. Right? My sister was in a car that went out of control. Just about, let's see. Then the car slammed, went straight into a tree. She was out. Anyway, what's the position of the person in a car that he can't control? Life is full of this. When you're in a car that you have control of, you're doing fine. You get from here to there and go where you want to go. So practically it's crucial that our life goes the way that our mind goes. Our life goes the way that our mind goes. If we can't control the mind, then our life is out of control. It just like happens to us. And we have no say in the matter. We're helpless. Disempowered is the current phrase. So the Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to control the mind. That's like essential education. We have so many schools and universities, and people know so much. They're taught history and dates and generals and wars. But how to control the mind, even why, that's something we ought to learn how to do. Off the syllabus or off the, not part of the program. The Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to control the mind. And then how to control the senses, because when the mind is not in control, then the senses take charge. And they just demand, I want this, I want that, and that's it. I become, the way it's put in Sanskrit is, servant of the senses. There are two words. One is master of the senses, and the other is servant of the senses. Master of the senses uses all of the senses according to his own purposes. And the servant of the senses gets dragged around by the senses. I was at an airport one time in America, early in the morning, 6 o'clock or something. I wasn't quite sure where I was going. I started talking to an airport guy. You know, which way do I go? He started telling me. And as we were talking, this woman went by, a businesswoman. You know, clap, clap, clap. The guy spun around like this. Then he turned back after she went by. Did you see that? Imagine that guy's neck at the end of the day. You know how many women go through that airport? Right? He's servant of his senses. He can't tell his eyes, you know, hey, Charlie, she doesn't belong to you. Keep your eyes on the ball. So that's lust. He doesn't know how to control his mind. Doesn't know how to control his senses. Therefore, he's always agitated. Right? The mind is not satisfied someplace during the day. He's dreaming about his dream. Then, how can he be peaceful? And if we can't be peaceful, how can we be happy? Right? To have happiness, you have to have peace. Peace of mind. So these are such important secrets or techniques to learn how to control, principles to learn how to control the mind, how to control the senses. So, briefly, because we are short in time, Krishna says this lust or desire is something that's been mischanneled. It's a sort of a reflection of the real thing. What's the real thing? Okay, the title gives it away. Lust, how to transform lust into love. The real thing is love. Love and lust, they have some similarity. They're both a kind of desire. But lust and love are different. Lust and love are different. Finally, real love means love for God. We're all spiritual living beings. At the present moment, we're in these material bodies. But the body's temporary. It's come on the scene, well, for me a few more years than for you, and stays on the scene for a little while, then gone. But every one of us is a little spark of consciousness, or atma, or soul. We're different from the body. We're the consciousness within the body. And that spark of consciousness, that soul, is eternal. But that eternal soul has turned its attention toward material body and material things, and we're trying to enjoy. Let me enjoy this, let me enjoy that. Either individually or corporately, we form a company, and we all try to enjoy. To accumulate something for our enjoyment, usually translated through money. But we don't recognize, number one, it doesn't really make me happy. No amount of material satisfaction will satisfy the soul. Something like putting petrol in the car. After you've filled up your tank, do you now feel full? You're hungry. And you fill up the tank of your car, you now feel, that was great, now I really feel full. You're still hungry. Because the car is just the machine, it's not you. So the body is also like that, it's a machine. It's not who we really are. We're inside the body. So the true desire of the living being is satisfied in relationship with God. And that's not just some abstract thing, but as you're a person, I'm a person, he's a person, God is a person. And one can have a personal relationship with God, with exchanges. You know, it's not just, I love you and I get nothing back. But there's exchange. You give something to your husband, he gives something to you, he gives something to your boyfriend, he gives something to you. You say something nice about him, he says something nice about you. There's an exchange. There are loving dealings. First, we have to establish a relationship. And then there are different kinds of dealings in that relationship. And then there's the development of actual love in the material world. And spiritually, there's a loving relationship with God. The first, and every one of us has it, it's there. Because we're parts of God. God is the supreme whole, we're parts. So the relationship is already there. But we've forgotten the relationship. Now I have a relationship with my country, with my family, with my school, with my company. But I don't know what my relationship is with God, or even whether there is God. But so the first thing is to revive, reestablish the relationship. And then once it's reestablished, then different kinds of things that we can do to cultivate that relationship, or to bring about exchanges in that relationship. And it finally comes to actual love. And when that love is there, love for God, or even as we're cultivating that loving relationship, the reflection of that relationship in the form of love for material things or love for some temporary satisfaction starts to become, you know, it's like you give me, I have a little dry biscuit and I'm holding on to that. That's all I've got. Then you come and you give me a big cake and the whole big, you know, spread. You know, forget the biscuit, guys. It becomes no big deal. So the satisfaction, the happiness that one finds in relationship with God on the spiritual platform is huge. The soul actually becomes, the soul becomes satisfied. Not just some brief satisfaction for the senses. They say, okay, that was good, give me more. But the soul actually becomes, all right, now I'm there satisfied. And that lasts permanently. Now I'm satisfied with something, but it will be finished. The thing will break, the girl will leave me, the guy will die, something will happen. That's not going to be forever. But the relationship with God is permanent, that's forever. Therefore the happiness is forever. The love is forever. It's, love is supposed to be, right, forever. That's what they said. But it's not in the material world. Everyone knows that. But the real love is there with God, with Krishna. And our Krishna consciousness movement is meant for reviving that, for redeveloping that loving relationship. It's for that purpose that we have this chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Ram. That automatically brings us in touch with God. We were saying before, you come in touch with something, with the iPod, or I get close to the girl, or whatever, and now the desire develops. You come in touch with God, and the same thing happens. Your attraction develops. And God is present in the form of His holy name. So this mantra, Hare Krishna mantra, consists of transcendental names of God. And by chanting, you can experience how your natural loving feelings for God or Krishna come out. I've said enough. Questions going for when you said half an hour, that means questions included, right? Okay. 10 minutes for questions. And who comes first? Questions, doubts, objections. Okay.
I'm going to ask for everyone, basically. There's this notion that I keep on hearing from people in general that we can enjoy now in this world and concentrate on God during old age or something like that. How do you address that notion, taking into consideration karma and, you know, that?
There was a young boy, he was 5 years old, he was in school, and he started telling his friends, come on, we should develop this Krishna consciousness. Now, the boy said, come on, we're kids, let's play. When we're old, we'll do this. So then the boy, his name is Prahlad, started saying to the guys, well, first of all, let's say you live 100 years. First of all, half that time you're in sleep. But putting that aside for the moment, okay, now you're going to play, and you're going to, you know, it's all going to be about sports and soccer, you know, whatever. Then stage 2, it becomes young boys and young girls, right? And everybody, that's going to occupy your attention. Then, let's say you get married, then the next thing is, where's money, where's money, where's money, where's money? Right? Making money, spending money. And then raising the children, and little Bobby has a toothache, and this and that. So many things go on in family life. That preoccupied us, it's like an ocean of things that we have to do, and responsibilities, and worries. And then in old age, rocking. I remember back in 1947. By that time, you know, do you still have your wits about you even? No, that's not your daughter, that's your son, mister. And that way, our whole life goes. Whole life goes. So that's why Prahlad, the boy, said, now, you know, while you're young, that, what do they say? While you're young, go for it now. Because you don't know. Even, you know, I'll do this when I'm old. Who says you might be old now? Because who's an old man? It's a person who's close to death. And who can say, no, I'm not close to death? I went to school with a girl when I was about 40 or 45. I was driving with a friend of my mom's who was still lived in the town I used to live in. And she said, who was in your class? And she knew, you know, this one's an optometrist, and this one is doing this, and I was asking about this one, that one. I asked about that girl. She said, "You didn't hear?" I said, "No." She said, "You didn't? You never went on like that." The story was, the girl's driving on her first year up to college with her mom and dad and her sister, and on the way up to the school, the car had a flat tire. So that her dad got out to fix the tire, and the two girls were helping. And the drunk driver came and knocked all three of them to kingdom come. Just like that. I thought this girl's grown up. She's got kids. She's got, you know, maybe 18 or something. Finished. So, Who among us can say, no, I'm going to live till I'm 60. I'll live till I'm 80. We may not live another day. Sure, we may live till we're 80, but we don't know. If I offered you, like ¥1,000,000, you wouldn't say, talk to me again when I'm old. But your ¥1,000,000 is, first of all, I have friends who have like that kind of money. And it's not okay now, I've got all this money and so I'm so happy. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. And even if I have it, it's not that now I have it forever. But this relationship with God is eternal. That's eternal value. And where your ¥1,000,000 leads you, in fact, more. And when you have ¥1,000,000, what happens? You don't know who your friends are anymore. Because everyone is your friend. Right? And you always have to worry about the protection of your ¥1,000,000.
So, I'm not sure if my question is appropriate, but I just want to ask, why do you guys cut your hair and maybe you go around?
So that you'll know who we are.
How is that related to?
Just like a policeman.
Connection of God.
Just like a policeman. How come he's wearing a badge and a uniform?
To be recognized.
Yeah, so you'll know right away that we're monks. You can ask us about Krishna. Your connection is from inside. It's your consciousness. That's the most important thing. You can dress how you want, wear your hair how you want. But the main thing is your consciousness. This is our uniform, you know. The judge wears a uniform, the policeman, the fireman. So, you know who's the judge, you know who's the fireman, and you know who's the monk.
Basically, there's nothing much about it.
No, it's not. That's not the big deal. Main thing is to understand the self. Yes. Is it possible?
To love more than one person.
To love more than one person.
Besides the brother or sister, you love the mother.
Yeah, to love the brother and the sister, the mother.
Besides that kind of love, I mean, like it's in a relationship. Uh-huh. Or lover kind of love.
Lover kind of love? Yeah, but it makes your life awfully complicated. Yeah, but you know, that's not real love. You know, I've got five boyfriends and you know, I don't know which one of them loves me more or I love more. That kind of love is not the kind of love that lasts. And you know what? There's a secret in that kind of love. You know, my girlfriend loves me so much and my boyfriend loves me so much. But what is it really? He's interested in his sense gratification. Right? He says, you know, I can't get over you, you're so beautiful, I love you so much, there's no one in the world like you. My God, I just want to see that you're happy, and, you know, what can I do for you, and da 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 da. The real story is, how can I gratify my senses? How can I gratify my senses? Right? I'll tell you whatever you want to hear about how much I care about you. I don't give a damn about you. You know, if I find a substitute, you're out. Even you get guys, you know, they're like 30 years of marriage and something, and a new cookie comes around. And then what's the love? Right? Because the real story is, he's just interested in gratifying his senses, and now he's got, you know, a better model to for that purpose. The old one can go to hell. So the real love is with God. And when you love God, what happens? You love everyone automatically. Not this kind of, you know, what can I get, what can I squeeze out of you kind of love. But you actually, real love. You love God, so naturally you love all the parts of God, all the living beings who are part of Him. Like if you love a tree, you automatically love the branches, the roots, the fruits, the leaves. A real love means love Krishna. And then all the other love falls into the proper place. Is that okay?
Yes.
How long would you chant it? Does it take to reach happiness?
First time.
It can be like right away. Person, you know, a person chants and starts to feel, this is cool. Start to feel, you know, a little happy. That's the first installment. That's the first installment. The obvious chanting is that.
And then how long does it take for others?
It's a question of development. How long it takes is up to you. You know, like how long does it take to learn geometry? Depends. How much you study, how much of an aptitude you have. But by what we chant, Hare Krishna, chant the name of God, right away we may feel a kind of happiness. And we go on chanting, we feel more happiness. Go on chanting, go on chanting. The mind becomes purified. That's the effect of the chanting. Mind becomes purified. Heart starts to feel joyful. And it develops until it becomes like spontaneous love. And it may differ for everyone, you know, someone is a day, someone is a minute, someone is a week, someone is longer. But it's there. It's like, you know, how long does it take for a sleeping person to wake up? Sometimes it takes a little longer, sometimes it takes a little shorter. But the natural state of everyone is to be awake. So somebody's calling your name. Hey, Jamie. Hey, Jamie. Hey, Jamie. And finally you're hearing and hearing and hearing. Hey, what's up? It's 7 o'clock. It's time to get. Okay. But because you're hearing that sound again and again, you wake up. So it's like that. Is that okay?
It's not really a question, but during the day, as we invite some people, there's one guy that I showed the pamphlet, and he read the topic for the day, and then he asked me that, how do we go from lust to love? Because in order for him to even have a girlfriend, it starts as lust, and then it starts as lust.
So, oh, he says it starts as love.
Yeah, so you can't really start at love. And then he's saying also, in terms of spirituality, what is there to attract him to God, to whatever that we are talking about? Because in order for him to be to love something, something else has to attract him to it first before he can even
that's, go that's good.
Himself.
Just like, you know, how do you become attracted to anything? First thing can be hearing. That I'm attracted to Egypt, let's say. How did I get attracted to Egypt? I've never been to Egypt. It starts with hearing. Egypt has this ancient civilization. Egypt has pyramids. Egypt has this big desert. Egypt has the Nile River. Egypt has, you know, whatever it is that you might be interested in. Like this museum with all the mummies in it. Yeah, after I hear about it, hear about it. Gee, I'd like to go to Egypt. It starts with hearing. It starts with hearing. And sometimes, you know, God comes in. You've got to meet this girl. I mean, this girl is a special girl, and you don't know it, but she's been watching you, and da 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 da. You don't know the girl from, you know, from Miss Liberty, you know, but by hearing, then you say, yeah, really, what's her name? And, well, how, what's she look like? And, you know, what else can you tell me about her? Right? And then just by hearing, you say, how do I meet her? Right? It starts with hearing. So we have these books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, they're full of topics about Krishna. And not just sort of God is great, but just attractive qualities of Krishna, attractive activities of Krishna, descriptions of Krishna's attractive form. Krishna, the very name Krishna, is all attractive. All attractive. He's the most beautiful, most famous, most strong, most wealthy, most attractive. So, just come in here. Just come in here. We know that you. What's in it for me, and why should I be interested? Come here. The beginning is just here. Is that okay? Yes. Okay, you have one, you haven't asked one yet, and in fact,
difficult to have like true love, because if you have a bit of lust, you can turn it into true love depending on the way you control that lust itself. Because every day you see the beautiful people, and from that lust, if you can talk to them and manage to love them and love you, you never find that true love. Even if you find someone amongst all those people who won't wish to live with true love, you won't accept that true love because of this aspect of that. So how can we overcome that aspect of
it? We have to purify our heart. Yes. The heart has to be purified. As long as there's junk in the heart, there's always going to be this. What's that?
I said that monster is...
Yeah, the monster is always going to be there.
Take on your, like, the love of God.
Yeah.
When you love God, you can respect the other person that you see, not because of beauty or anything. Just like respect.
Yeah, you don't think, here's something for me to enjoy, here's someone for me to enjoy. That's the material mentality. Exploit and enjoy. Exploit and enjoy. Sees some money and he's thinking how big it may have gone. Sees a car and thinks, you know, maybe I can steal it or some other way to get it. Sees a woman and thinks, wow, you know, I could enjoy her, you know, only for a night. Everyone's thinking how I can enjoy it. But pure consciousness is not like that. It's all about me and all about my enjoyment. It's a recognizing that there's a higher enjoyment. That we're actually meant to give enjoyment. Ultimately, to give enjoyment to God. And in the service of God, then we can spread happiness actually to others. For that, we have to purify our heart. Just a question of a change of heart. Change of heart. But this chanting is a means to change the heart. Purify the heart. Like you have a mirror. You look at it, you can't see yourself. You've got 10 years worth of dust on it. Then you start cleaning the mirror, and then you can see yourself. So this is, it's like that.
When you're chanting,
mm-hmm.
It's only the heart that is pure, and then you get the wisdom.
When there's chanting, then the, what would you say, like evil elements, they don't like it. But you turn on the light, the darkness disappears, and then the little creatures that are only happy in the dark look. So chanting, someone possessed, someone mad, someone, you know, all sorts of things.
So you make crazy individual, like, what's going on, like,
yeah.
When chanting, he goes,
you know. Yeah, ghosts start to say, let's go someplace else. And, you know, all that sort of stuff. Ghosts and possession, madness, and so on. As the heart becomes purified, there's that transcendental sound. It's like, appears. Then darkness, madness, illusion, loss. All this stuff disappears. Yeah. The more we chant, I mean, that's like we were saying, cleaning the dust from the mirror, this is the dust. Illusion, greed, madness, anger, envy, possession, all that stuff. That dust is.
spirituality work if I don't make sacrifices, like I don't give up meat? I still want to have sex. Mm-hmm. I still want to have fun. Mm-hmm. And but there's an attraction for this Krishna mantra because it's entertaining. Mm-hmm. And I want to keep some time for thinking about spirituality. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like the association of people I meet. Can I have the rest of the 2 hours? Or can I just like... I feel
first
like I've got to make a lot of sacrifice.
Yeah, the other words, first there was this illusion here that there's two worlds that both have, that each have something good to offer. That's why I said it's an illusion. You know, we think that the material world has got so much to offer, but it's a trap, it's an illusion, it's an ain't so. It's like the deer sees water out there in the desert and says, wow, that, you know, that's it, I'm going out there. But is it there? No. That's called a mirage. Seems to be there, but when you finally get there, death is there. You die out in the desert. So the material world seems, that's why it's called Maya. Maya means illusion, or that which is not. The material world offers so much, but what it delivers is something else again. It seems to offer, take a simple example that, you know, everybody knows by now. A cigarette offers happiness. Right? Even there's a brand in America called Cool. Yeah, I mean, how stupid they go. People smoke that Cool cigarette or any other kind of cigarette, they're getting some kind of happiness, right? But then down the line, what's the real payoff? Cancer, lung disease, right? It seems to be one thing, but it's really another. So that's the first thing, the best of two worlds. This world doesn't really have a best. What appears to be best is, you know, it's like the best illusion. It's not really what it seems. That's the first thing. Second thing is, yeah, you know, I'm still eating this or that, or I'm still doing this or that. Can I still chant Hare Krishna? Yeah. Will I still get some benefit? Yeah. Will I make lots and lots and lots of advancement? These are the things that will hold me back. It's like I'm trying to, I have a boat, and I'm rowing, and I'm rowing, and I'm rowing, and I'm rowing, but I don't want to pull up the anchor. And how far am I going to get? Well, not so far.
Even if I use a condom and go for my status checkups? If I use a condom and I go to check my status and do it responsibly? Just have to give it up totally?
Good question.
No, how about getting married? You talk about responsible.
Yeah, I'd like to.
But your idea of responsible is, you know, that you've got this little rubber thing, and, you know, bang, 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 and thank you very much. Slam, bang, thank you, ma'am. And then, you know, that's responsible because you had that little rubber thing and she didn't get pregnant, maybe. But your idea basically is to exploit her, to use her.
But I wouldn't lie to and tell her things like, I love you forever, you are
the most beautiful. There's always a lie there someplace. Maybe you lie to her or you pay her, one or the other.
So you have to give it up all.
I didn't say that, get married.
Oh, get married. Yeah.
You know, sex, first of all, sex means that there'll be pregnancy. The natural result of sex is pregnancy. The result of pregnancy is children. And you're just gonna, you know, you're just there for a one-night stand and now you're a dad. But you're responsible. You know, if you want to have sex, accept the consequences of sex. Consequences of sex are children. How do you raise children? You raise them in a family. So don't give me this baloney about responsible, okay? If you're responsible, then be responsible. Be a gentleman. Get married. Don't play around with, you know, 7 other girls on the side from your wife. It's not becoming a monk. But it's not becoming a dog. If you really want to have sex, like, not worry about it, become a dog. Become a monkey. That's what they do. You know, every 10 minutes or every half hour, they're, you know, pump and pump. And they don't really care whether it's their mother or their sister or who it is. So if that's what you want, you know, you're way behind them. Dogs and monkeys are ahead of you. You have a lot of catching up to do. But we don't recommend that. You know, human life is not meant for the happiness that the dogs and bugs get. There's a higher purpose in human life, and you can lose it. From Bhagavad Gita, we understand that from this life, there's a next life. And if you live this life like a monkey, next life, you get that body. So you're building your future, you know, you're going to college because you're interested in your future. So your whole life is building the future for your next life. And if your life is, you know, let me live like a monkey, then your next life will be, you get the body. Or if you want to be elevated in a different way. That's up to you. We're not one of those cheap movements that promise you, you know. Yeah, you know, you just do this and do this and do whatever you want. Take this drug, have sex this way, do everything. And just meditate for 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the afternoon. And you'll become, you know, you'll have the greatest of everything. All will all be yours. Not that kind of cheating. You know, why should I lie to you? You know, can you play soccer all day and still get your PhD? Probably not. Some other question? Yeah.
I wonder if you say like, it's like people nowadays are like producing. Yeah, but it's like, sex is supposed to be like it's a reproductive process.
Yeah.
Can we even like be allowed to take like less than 1 to 5 days? As long as you know what I said, like, it's not like an everyday thing, and yeah. People like see it, they are like giving it a different dimension such that people. I'm not understanding like in a different way.
People think that just this physical thing will bring happiness. And then they have that physical thing and it doesn't give them happiness. And they think, well, it was the wrong girl, it was the wrong way, something or other, let's try it again. And this time we'll get more happiness. Well, that was good, but you know, maybe we could try it this way, maybe upside down and backwards, maybe that was a girl, let me try a boy, you know, whatever it is. And they do it, they do it, they do it, and still they're not happy. Because however much petrol you pump into the car, my belly is still empty. The soul is not satisfied by, you know, this physical gratification, that physical gratification. Again, one's never satisfied by that. That's the secret. You know, in the advertisements, it's like, oh, all the flowers are going to bloom, the birds are going to sing, and I'm going to be happy forever. It doesn't work that way. Not real.
Well,
very briefly, Bhagavad Gita says it goes in cycles. Just like your days go in cycles. There's day, there's night. And again, there's day, and there's night. Keeps going. Or you take it a little bigger. There's summer, then there's fall, then there's winter, then there's spring. Then there's summer, then there's fall, then there's winter, then there's spring. Keeps coming around, right? Keeps coming around. The sun goes in a circle. It starts here, it goes all the way around, and it comes back. But even the atoms, you know, the little protons are spinning, they start here. Yeah. All over again.
It's going to, like, let's say we have a big bang, maybe it's going to explode. And
yeah, after it explodes, something start again. Science also says that there's, it starts, you know, like real compressed and expands. And that's there in Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago. The world is created, stays for some time. There's all sorts of transformations that take place, then it's over, then it starts again.
Okay, and then now, what about the spiritual levels? Does it talk about the, like they say here on Earth, there's a spiritual, there's another dimension.
On Earth?
On Earth. Like,
what do they mean by who? I don't know who's saying it, but what do they mean?
Like, we're living on this one dimension because we see each other, we react with each other. And in this, there's also like the devil, like the ghosts, and
yeah.
Also the spiritual, they also hear.
Yeah.
But we can't see them.
Yeah.
And only certain people can see them, so
they're
living amongst us.
Yeah.
Because it's intertwined with our dimension.
Yeah.
So, not.
That's there. That's described in the literature. That there are, well, I mean, there are viruses. You don't see them, but they're interacting with our world. No viruses, and you don't see them. So similarly, there are all sorts of creatures, from ghosts to this and that. They're not. When we say spirit, we don't mean spirits like that, but spirit beings, the pure spirit, the soul of them. Within everything. That's the real spiritual dimension. Otherwise, these things like, you know, devils and spirits and so on, you know, they're frustrated creatures. They're frustrated creatures who try to be happy in some unnatural way in this world, and they've failed, and now they've taken this, you know, a weird kind of a existence. Where they can only be happy by, you know, jumping on you and trying to get into your mind, whatever it is. Very frustrated. So, one can get free from those sort of influences by chanting. And ultimately by getting out of the material world, because that all pertains to, you know, there's devils, there's ghosts, there's tax collectors. Right? There's thieves, there's sharp businessmen who are figuring out some way to pick your pocket. The whole world is full of all sorts of there's insects waiting to bite you, there's mosquitoes waiting to give you malaria. What place you've come to? Huh? What a place. So this is not the real home of the living beings. The real home is in the spiritual world. Association. Then you don't worry about all the characters that you find. Okay.
Right.
Well, you don't have to think of it as a dimension, but there's just that the world is full of all sorts of people with all sorts of, or creatures with all sorts of influence. Politicians have a certain kind of influence. A doctor has a certain kind of influence. Everyone has a certain kind of influence. Rock stars have a certain kind of influence. they start singing, and everybody goes, ah! You know, have a certain kind of influence. So there are also kind of subtle creatures. They have their kind of influence. They're part of this world. You don't have to really think of it as another dimension. They're just, you know, other kinds of creatures in other kinds of bodies, you know, like there's bodies that we have, and then there are bodies that insects have and fish have, and then there's this weird kind of bodies that these guys have, which are called subtle bodies. That if you say you don't see them. But they're part of the world, part of what makes the world nice and a great place. Okay. More? Done? Question? Okay. We're past our half hour, I know that. Okay. Somebody's getting pointed at. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Okay, thank you all for coming. Your presence was very appreciated. And thank you to our speaker, Dad Beta Swami. And I hope that everyone has learned something that you can take away and use in your everyday life. And please do join us next time. We'll also have these kind of services on Thursdays, forum period at LT2.
Do you want to sing for a couple minutes more? Tell us what to do. You're in charge.